Our third and final formal presentation for today's webinar will be offered by Dr. Massey, who is an agricultural economist at the University of Missouri with the Commercial Agriculture Program. His specialty is risk management, with an emphasis on the impact of production agriculture in the environment. He has worked on reducing atrazine in water, the management of manure, using weather information to manage land decisions, and educating farmers and policymakers about the environmental sensitivities on their lands. He has a PhD in agricultural economics from Oklahoma State University and was on the faculty of the University of Nebraska before coming to the University of Missouri to work with the Commercial Agriculture Program in 1995. As a personal note, Ray is married with three daughters, and he enjoys woodworking and bicycling. Dr. Massey joins us today to present pasture rental arrangements. So, Dr. Massey, thank you for being with us today, and we look forward to your comments.
Well, thank you, John. And I might just mention right here at the beginning that I'm going to kind of take my presentation based on what's already been said and kind of give pointers in how pasture rental rate may differ or be affected because it's pasture relative to cropland. So some of the stuff that's been said before, I'll just give a slight twist to. Before I go on with these economic objectives, I'd also like to say that the pasture rental rates or rental activities seem to differ the further west you go. Further west, a lot of the pastures are predominantly pasture rental, whereas you get into Missouri and then further east in Missouri, some of this pasture is kind of comes along with cropland, and it's a portion of a rental arrangement that's both pasture and crop. And so there are some differences geographically in what goes on. But economically, the livestock owner is wanting to obtain economic returns to investment and labor. So he's going to be buying cattle. He's going to be providing management, perhaps some feed, his labor. He's wanting to get an economic return to that. The landowner, on the other hand, is wanting to get an acceptable economic return to his land that that he is providing. But the difference between pasture and a cropland here might be the fact that the landowner is trying to maintain a grass stand and maintain grass quality. So there's some growing crop that the landowner is responsible for here. And so the key to success is understanding that the perennial nature of pasture makes pasture rental a long-term concern. Even if the lease is renewed annually, the landowner is perhaps even more concerned with what's happening on a year-to-year basis because that pasture is his. In order to make sure that everything works well, the key is clearly defining the stocking rate. And at this point, I would say that a pasture rent should definitely be written because a written lease will define that stocking rate. And I've got some examples here on this slide of how stocking rate is not clearly understood. The term animal units is used very commonly in the western U.S. Historically, if you ask a lot of old ranch hands, it's a 1,000-pound beef cow with a calf that's less than 3 months of age. But if you ask a new graduate from the university, it is a consumption of 17.6 pounds of dry matter per day. Which one is it? At that point, the definition is not clear, and therefore I think the lease does need to be written as to what exactly is an animal unit. Perhaps the further east you go, it's, in my opinion, perhaps a little more simpler. They just say, what is the number, the size, and the type of the animal, as opposed to trying to define an animal unit. But even if you get the definition of an animal right, and it's clearly understood, the stocking rate issue is still needs to come down to some other definitions, and that is, when is the stocking rate measured? The hope is that the livestock will weigh more at the end of the lease than at the beginning. So are you going to measure the stocking rate at the beginning or at the end? And some would say it at maximum during the lease period. So if there is some adjustments, again, that'd be with the cow-calf activity where the calf is removed, the cow continues to stay on. There is this question of when is the stocking rate measured? And what is the duration of the stocking rights? Is it for a full year? Is the pasture just being leased as a pasture? Or is it for some specified portion of the year where you are just going to be renting it for the spring or the fall or some portion of it? Again, these types of questions and answers are going to be critical to having a lease relationship that is beneficial to both the landowner and the tenant, or at this point, the livestock owner. So they need to be clearly defined and best in writing. Some other factors that will affect lease rates is like any other real estate transaction, location, location, location. Again, many times the livestock owner is wanting land that's in proximity to his livestock, and so there are opportunities for differences to exist because of proximity to the headquarters or the other land, and also just the quality of the land that changes even within short distances. Water is a key issue, and water is handled differently at different areas of the United States, whether it's access to ponds and streams, which is very common here in Missouri, or whether you've got windmills and in some places actually water delivered out to the cattle. Those are going to affect the lease rates that are going on. Landowner services. In some cases, the landowner is actually the one that would be looking at the cattle on a daily basis as opposed to the livestock owner coming out daily, making sure that things are going well. If that's the case, the livestock or the land owner needs to recognize that that's a contribution to production and be compensated for that. Frequently in Missouri, though, as an honesty thing here, pasture is frequently considered an incidental part of a crop farm rental. You know, if you rent 100 acres here in Missouri, you might get 80 acres of cropland out of it, and you've got 20 acres of pasture land right next to it. The farmer is most interested in that cropland, and it's at this point that you do need to say, wait a minute, that 20 acres of pasture land also is important asset, and so how are you going to manage it? What are you going to do with regard to stocking rate, to fencing, and things of that nature? So make sure that it comes up in the discussion of a land rental, even if it's only for crops that the land is being rented. So after that, many of the things that Kevin and William have already talked about are the same with regard to rental rate options. You can rent on a per acre basis. This is perhaps the simplest because everybody knows how many acres are out there. The drawback of this is that it gives incentive to stock heavily. So if you've clearly defined what the stocking rate is, the duration of the stocking period, that's not a problem. But if that's not clearly defined on a per acre basis, you might be disappointed to find out a year later that your grass has been damaged. Another way is the share of gain basis, which would just be like a crop share. It does require trust in the livestock owner reporting accurately how much gain was obtained. And at the same time, that gives incentive to stock heavily because that livestock owner might just be concerned about a single year worth of gain. So the question is, define very well the stocking rate. There are rental rate options on a per animal unit or a per animal day, and that requires trust in the livestock owner reporting it, but it does reduce the incentive to stock heavily because the heavier that they stock, the more animal units are out there, they'll have to pay for those animal unit days. And so those are the three ways that rental options are typically written. Whenever you're trying to figure out, okay, what is the cost going to be, you'll want to know what your landowner's contribution is and then your livestock owner's contribution. For the most part, the landowner is looking at the ownership cost associated with the land and facilities. So the land is the most important one, but we do encourage people to value the facilities that benefit the livestock producer. If there's some corrals, some barns, some watering systems and things of that nature, those need to be taken into account. But if there are facilities that are not going to be used by the livestock producer, even though the landowner thinks they have value, they may not be giving value to this particular rental agreement and should not be valued. I might mention that the rent-to-value ratio is lower, usually, for pasture rents than for crop rents. So if you're looking at a percentage of the value of your land and trying to estimate a contribution from that, for pasture tends to be lower than for croplands. There are some variable costs that landowners sometimes contribute, fertilizer perhaps, labor perhaps. They need to be considered if they are offered. And I just mentioned here that landowners usually compute their cost on a per acre basis. The reason I do that is my next slide shows that the livestock owner usually thinks of things on a per animal basis, and so we've got to get that back together. The livestock owner, though, is looking at their net returns to grazing. They're saying, hey, what was the value or increased value of animals during the grazing period, and what did it cost me as far as purchasing the livestock, any feed, any veterinary medicine, any travel, transportation, things of that nature, so that they get a net return that they can begin to use in their negotiation of a rental rate. Once they get that net return, because they want it on a per acre basis, most likely for rental, they just need to divide that net return by the stocking rate to determine what the per acre rate would be. For determining the lease rate, we can go with the cash rent, where the landowner and the livestock owner negotiate from their respective contributions that they've just figured out, as shown on the last two slides. Go with a share of gain. It may be that they're just splitting the gain in the livestock value. And then there are variable rates, that just like there are with crops, where you increase or decrease the lease rate based on the number of pounds that were gained or based on a market price that was obtained. Again, I really do think that for pasture leases especially, it is critical to put them in writing because of the importance of understanding what the stocking rate is and what the term of the stocking is. It just gives you an opportunity to discuss and to have agreed upon terms. It is a guide to heirs, a documentation for tax purposes, but put it in writing. And I might just mention at this point here that at aglease101.org, we have actual lease forms for pasture and for cash rent of crop and for share rent of crop. So we have quite a few forms and educational activities or educational material for these types of leases that we've been talking about today. And at that, I think I'm going to turn it back to you, John.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Massey, very much for your insights on pasture rental arrangements. I'll have a couple of questions here now for you, and then we'll move to a more general discussion. One of those questions has come in is, much of the forage produced on native rangeland in particular, but also on some croplands that would be used as pasture, is variable due to weather. Is there some way that you've seen people use to account for this type of variability in designing their lease arrangements?
Yeah, there is. As I'd mentioned in one of my slides there, you can do it just like William mentioned on for crop rent. You could say, I expect to have so many pounds of gain in this season, and then you would have some ratio of how many pounds of gain actually were obtained versus what was expected, and that percentage or that ratio would change the lease that you have. And that account, that would take into consideration the variable grass or pasture quality just because of weather.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for that insight. Another question is, have you worked with operators, particularly given how volatile conditions are currently for a lot of livestock operators, have you worked with those folks that have tried to incorporate factors to account for changes in input and output prices, or, you know, kind of flex factors like William was discussing as far as their pasture leasing arrangements, and how have they incorporated those?
You know, I'm going to have to answer no, that I have not worked with anybody trying to incorporate that on the livestock side. And it could be where I'm from. In Missouri, the pasture leases tend to be incidental to crop leases. And so they're not getting very complicated. They tend to be on a cash rent or, predominantly on cash rent and without any variation for input prices. Oh, just a second. Kevin Duvetter has worked with them.
I've worked just a limited amount with some of cow-calf producers. And at this point, the flex is entirely the price flex. You know, as William gave an example, and as you just alluded to at the previous question, that's a little bit risky if we don't account for the fact that if it doesn't rain, the production might not be there. But right now, at the moment, what they've done, several people I've worked with, they've established the base cash rent, kind of using a five-year average price for the calves they plan to wean, and then they're flexing based on what prices actually will be this year relative to that five-year average. That has not been used to the extent, I've not worked with anybody that's doing that in a stocker operation, because obviously there we have to account for both the margin, the buy price as well as the sell. But I have worked with some people on cow-calf that are doing it 100% at this point on price.
Okay, well, thank you both for those insights.